Here's a number that captures the week on Wall Street. The Nasdaq fell nearly 3% for the week ending July 18th, making it the worst 7-day stretch for the index in over a month. S&P futures this morning are sitting around 7,497, down another 80 points, suggesting the selling pressure hasn't exhausted itself. The driver of the sell-off was the semiconductor sector, specifically investors rotating out of chip and AI-adjacent stocks into sectors like banking that had underperformed during the AI rally.
Let me add the Musk angle here, because it's striking. Elon Musk's net worth has dropped below $800 billion after a failed Starship launch dragged SpaceX shares to a post-IPO low. His peak fortune was approximately $1.45 trillion just weeks ago. That's a decline of more than $650 billion from peak, an amount larger than the entire GDP of countries like Argentina or the Netherlands. It's a reminder that paper wealth in private markets, tied to high-growth ventures, can evaporate rapidly when operational setbacks occur.
Jensen Huang's prediction that semiconductors will become the world's largest industry is worth taking seriously rather than dismissing as promotional commentary. Huang's track record of correctly identifying major technology transitions, he was talking about GPU computing for AI years before it became consensus, gives him credibility that most executives don't have. His argument is essentially that AI compute demand will scale so dramatically that the chips powering it will represent a larger economic category than any current industry, including oil and gas or financial services. This is a good moment to talk about a concept that's relevant to how we should think about NVIDIA's market position, antitrust law. There's been increasing scrutiny of NVIDIA's dominance in the AI chip market, and understanding the legal framework helps clarify what regulators can and can't do.
Right, and it's worth explaining this carefully because there's a common misconception that being dominant in a market is itself illegal. Under the Sherman Antitrust Act of 1890, which is the foundational U.S. antitrust statute, there are two main prohibitions. Section 1 bans anti-competitive agreements, price fixing, market allocation between competitors. Section 2 prohibits the monopolization of a market or attempts to monopolize. But here's the critical nuance. Simply having a monopoly isn't illegal. What's illegal is achieving or maintaining that monopoly through anti-competitive conduct rather than through superior products or business acumen.
Right. Courts have consistently held that market share alone doesn't establish antitrust liability. NVIDIA controls somewhere around 80% of the AI chip market by some estimates, but that concentration could be legally defensible if it resulted purely from making better products. The legal question becomes, did NVIDIA use exclusive dealing arrangements, predatory pricing, or other conduct that excluded rivals through means other than competition on the merits? That's the evidentiary standard regulators would need to meet to bring a successful Section 2 case, and it's substantially harder to prove than just pointing at a large market share number.
It's analogous to the old Standard Oil case. Rockefeller's company controlled around 90% of U.S. oil refining by 1880, but the Supreme Court's 1911 breakup ruling wasn't just about the market share. It was about the specific practices Standard Oil used, secret railroad rebates, predatory local price cuts, to exclude competitors. Market power plus bad conduct equals antitrust liability. Market power alone doesn't get you there.
The SEC's decision to advance the optional quarterly reporting rule, despite more than 200,000 opposition comments, the largest comment volume in the agency's history, is the kind of regulatory move that generates immediate controversy. The rule would allow public companies to report financial results semi-annually rather than quarterly, aligning with European practice. Proponents, including President Trump, who has long advocated this change, argue that quarterly reporting encourages short-termism. The argument is that executives focus on hitting the next quarter's numbers rather than building for the long term.
The opposition case is straightforward. More frequent disclosure means investors have more current information to make decisions. Moving to semi-annual reporting creates six-month windows where the public has no visibility into corporate performance, plenty of time for insiders to act on information that retail investors don't have. Those 200,000 comments came overwhelmingly from individual investors and investor advocacy groups, not from corporate America, which suggests the political calculus favoring the change doesn't align with the interests of the investors the SEC is theoretically designed to protect.
Morgan Stanley executives selling millions in stock after a record quarter is conventional insider behavior. Executives regularly sell equity as part of planned diversification strategies. But the volume and timing are notable. When a firm reports a record quarter and executives immediately monetize large positions, it raises a natural question about whether they see the record quarter as a high watermark rather than a new baseline. Morgan Stanley's equity sales business has been strong, but the investment banking deal flow is subject to geopolitical disruption, and the executives selling now may be pricing in some of that uncertainty.
GameStop's Ryan Cohen publicly vowing to come for eBay, one way or another, is the kind of statement that's simultaneously a legitimate strategic declaration and theater. Cohen has successfully navigated GameStop from a dying retail chain to a company with a significant cash balance and optionality. Whether he can actually execute a hostile or negotiated acquisition of eBay, a company with a market cap many times GameStop's, is genuinely uncertain. But the statement signals that Cohen is looking for acquisition targets and that e-commerce platforms are in his sights.
The Hyundai acquisition of Boston Dynamics' remaining shares from SoftBank is a cleaner story. The $325 million deal gives Hyundai full ownership of the robotics firm at a valuation of roughly $3.4 billion, more than triple the approximately $1 billion valuation when SoftBank acquired the company in 2021. Hyundai has been integrating Boston Dynamics Robotics into its manufacturing operations, and full ownership removes the complexity of shared governance with SoftBank's Vision Fund, which has itself been under pressure to monetize its portfolio investments.